Reitman University.
Come to my hackathon. Come. Go. I just bought you a hackathon. Special deal. 20% off.
Startup Shook. Exploring Israel's Tech Bazaar with Deo Arlo.
So welcome everyone to Startup Shook. Today we have Akira. We met yesterday when we had like an office hour with you. I was telling you about my startup that I'm building here, and I read about you and your VC in Fundomo. So I'd like just to chat with you, hear about you, your background, you know, learn what we can see, what we can learn from your experiences in VCs, common pitfalls that founders make, you know, when they're raising funds. But also let's just chat about whatever, you know, this podcast, we like to talk about philosophy, startups, and technology. So it's just a chill talk.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be here. Especially here in Finland at Freight. What an awesome place that you guys have. You guys are very lucky to be able to be working alongside such smart people, and obviously yourself, to take a leap of faith to come out here to join a program that's new and, you know, I guess a lot of unknowns, but so far I've been so impressed with, you know, yourself and everyone else I've met here. So it's been a fun couple of days, and yeah, looking forward to staying in touch and seeing, you know, what all the cool things that are, you know, going to come out of this cohort.
Hell yeah. And we have a lot of cool stuff happening here. Before we get into that, however, let's talk about you. Like, who is Akira? Where'd you study? What's your childhood? Who's Akira when he's like, you know, 5-year-old? And why are you doing what are you doing now?
Yeah, no, totally. So I grew up in the US. I was born in a town just outside of New York City. My mother is from Japan. My father is from Minnesota. So half Japanese. Definitely influenced a lot about who I am as a person and how I view the world. I grew up with my grandmother who only spoke Japanese to me. So living in a multicultural household definitely shaped how I think, how I behave, how I interact with others. I think, you know, US culture is a stark contrast to Japanese culture in many ways, both on the behavioral side and like from a societal level, from like a macro lens onto a micro lens as well. So I'm very grateful to have kind of two different backgrounds that kind of contrast each other in a unique manner. But yeah, grew up in the States, from a young age, was always very, curious to understand the world around me. I think, you know, my parents definitely gave me a lot of freedom to kind of explore my curiosities and to, you know, give me the agency to pursue them. Obviously growing up as a internet native Gen Z, I was born in 1999. This was, my childhood was, you know, we were blessed to have access to personal phones, personal computing devices, laptops, electronics had, you know, the cost of electronics had fallen so greatly. I mean, even since my childhood, but, you know, came at a perfect time to kind of, satiate the curiosity of someone that truly wanted to go out and explore. So the internet was definitely an important part of my childhood. I remember, I got an iPod Touch when I was about 10, you know, downloaded Facebook and Twitter when I was in fourth grade, which was probably a mistake in hindsight, but at the time I was just curious about what was going on, and these social media platforms allowed me to hear and chat with people who were doing different things around the world, and just gain new perspectives from where I was physically located. So, you know, as a kid, I was an avid sports player. I played ice hockey and soccer and volleyball growing up. Athletics were always an important part of my upbringing. The discipline, the camaraderie, the teamwork, all these kind of intangible skill sets that I've gained through those experiences are extremely valuable to me, both now as a professional, but also as a person and as a human. So very grateful for those experiences as well. Went to public high school in the States, went to university, State University, University of Connecticut, where I studied civil engineering. My personal interests and hobbies going into university were very much on the scope of the built environment and physical world that we live in. You know, being half Japanese, when I would travel to Japan, I would see all these fantastic cities and across Asia, East Asia, frankly, you know, I'm sure you're well aware of,
yeah.
Cities that work well, cities that are built for people, very efficient, clean, safe, very orderly in many ways. And I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, cultural aspects, right? People are very, harmonious in many ways, you know, ethnically very homogenous too. I think these types of things cater well to a well-functioning built environment, but at the same time, it's clear that it's the priority of the governments of these nations. And my thought was, well, you know, why can't we do this back home? You know, the US has, at one moment in time in the early 20th century, had many prosperous cities, right? Cincinnati, is one, Detroit, cities that, you know, were both economically booming and socially had many interesting, layers to them. But, you know, in the last 40 years, we've seen a stark decline, as we, you know, offshored much of our manufacturing. A lot of these kind of economic hubs located in the heart of the United States, lost their magic, and have been kind of hollowed out from within. That in combination with the rise of the automobile, right? The car is so synonymous, freedom and prosperity in America, right? Like you think of a car in America, you think of the music and the culture that come along with it. And in many ways, I think this kind of individual sense of individualism has brought the US to where it is, but it's also left behind kind of this, this built environment that we've created for ourselves that is, you know, defined by sprawl, where we have these, you know, 8-lane highways that, you know, separate these towns and these very segregated neighborhoods of white picket fences and big front yards, urban centers that are defined by large strip malls and parking lots. And it's very difficult for people to walk around and feel a sense of place and belonging in these cities and towns across the US. So my thought was, well, what are the ways that we can change this, right? And how can we make a built environment that's better for people, and you know, change the kind of narrative that, you know, the US is a very car and auto centric world, and, you know, we build our places for cars. So, you know, that was kind of my passion. I'd always loved math and physics. You know, I thought engineering would be a great starting point, so I studied that. Public transit was always a focus of mine. How can we bring high speed rail to the United States?
Yeah.
We still have yet to solve that one. But you know, during that time I kind of realized that the bureaucracy of, you know, how we build in the United States physically did not match the speed at which I wanted to work. And I felt that my, you know, time and energy would be better spent aligning myself in a career path that would cater better to the speed and the types of people that I wanted to be around, the types of intellectuals, and find something that was much higher leverage than what I was currently doing. So that was kind of my spur into kind of what I'm doing now, and, you know, has kind of propelled me into a different path than what I'd originally kind of charted myself onto.
Very interesting. I actually read about your studying in UConn civil, bachelor and master, but I didn't expect you to speak a lot about it. Do you think this current career of yours in VC will lead you back into civil? Do you plan to come back?
That's a good question. I think, you know, when I'm sitting on my deathbed and I look back at my life, and, you know, I think legacy is a difficult word and concept because there's so many humans. Time is so long. Humanity has existed for, you know, years and will continue to flourish for years. And what does legacy truly mean? But it's all relative at the end of the day. And I think when I look back at my life, I want to be able to, you know, say that I did have some influence on the physical world that we live in today. I mean, there are so many great digital technologies that we have exposure to that, you know, many of us are prone to, like, moving into these kind of, you know, more abstract realms, but we still all live in the physical environment, built environment. So, you know, one thing I'd love to do is, you know, make high speed rail a reality in the US, you know, help play a role in making cities that are built for people and instead of cars. I think it's an important trend that needs to be reversed. And, you know, I do ultimately hope to you know, leave my stamp in that way in some shape or form.
It's very interesting. It's interesting to me how a lot of our life missions that we slowly build and grow into are quite serendipitous, and we're sort of given to it by our environment. You seeing, you know, how East Asia is very orderly and having a great civil infrastructure, but not in the US. And so it slowly motivates you into moving into that direction. And myself in the world of defense, it's quite interesting. I would love to talk more into that. And I can relate a lot into what your growing up feels like, because I'm also born in the early 2000s. And it's a very interesting time because we get to experience from having no electronics, no internet, and then having it. I think we're a unique generation that experiences that. I remember like the first ever video I saw in the internet. I think it was a Viva La Vida music video on YouTube on like a very old computer. And it was very, very much influential to my next steps moving into computer science, electronics, and just realizing how big of this world is, this virtual world. But I do love the physical world more. And this is why I started mechanical engineering. Sports was also a big part of my life. You know, I did badminton a lot. My dad actually
had many. So cool. I love badminton.
Badminton as well. Yeah. People like to joke that this is like the most intense sport, which it's not, but it's very, very,
oh, this is very fast. Very fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll have this moment in the West soon. I think it's been very predominantly dominated by Southeast Asia, but I think badminton is due for a moment.
Yeah. The fastest moving racket sport, the ball, is the badminton.
Yeah.
And skateboarding as well. But yeah, I grew up finally moving into mechanical engineering, and there I am building a startup in Finland and meeting you. So what do you think? You know, I was speaking with Lee Ho. He was a Korean guy. He built companies. He's in YC right now, second time founder, or third time founder, actually. And we spoke about this and how a lot of the motivation that we have into what we make our life missions of is quite given to us. You know, we don't really choose about it. We're born into an environment, and that environment sort of, you know, it gives cues to the people living in it on what is needed for something for you, civil infrastructure. For me, it's perhaps defense and safety and security. And we grow into that. Well, what do you think about it?
Yeah, I think we are very much a product of the environment that we bring in, the people that we surround ourselves in, obviously your parents, who you raise, who you spend your time with, the situational circumstances that you are born into greatly influence how you think and how you view the world, therefore giving you kind of a direction to want to head it in life. I think for many, it's not always obvious what that is. I think for some, it obviously clicks right away. You understand, okay, this is what I like, this is what I good at, this is what I'm good at, this is where I can make an impact on the world. But, you know, for many, it takes a long time. But fundamentally, all these things are influenced by who you spend your time with, where you live, your environment, basically where you are in the world. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, the environment that you're in is it makes you who you are. Like, I think it's a common saying, it's like you are who you spend. The five most people who you're a reflection of the five most people you spend your time with. And I think that's very true. So, yeah.
What are some technologies you're quite bullish about these days? VC, you're exposed to a lot of industries.
Yeah. Well, I think there's some obvious ones. Artificial intelligence and robotics is definitely the hottest market right now. I think the leaps and bounds that we're making there, you know, will truly shape the world that we know in a better way. Cost of goods and services, I think in the next decade will drop severely. If you think of agriculture, think of humanoids serving as, you know, through a variety of different labor markets, autonomous vehicles, driving down the cost of transportation. There's lots of things that will kind of drive the world in a way that we can never imagine. So yes, it's hot right now. I think it'll be hot in 5 years, and I think it's well deserved that sector is hot. But in the world of abundance, I think, you know, we should, you know, as an investor, we should be thinking about, well, what are the things that are scarce? You know, when everything is at your fingertips, what are the things that are still scarce today and still will be scarce in the future? So for me, you know, things that I'm most bullish on right now, obviously are, things I believe are necessary now, important now, but will also be important in 10 to 20 years. And this includes things such as commodities, natural resources, Bitcoin, things that are finite in the world that we know it. And that's where I plan on spending most of my time. I think, you know, as the demand for these goods and services goes up, the demand for these commodities will also rise. This is a very secular trend. So I think that there is a big opportunity there, both investing in the commodities itself, but also driving and backing the technologies that will better facilitate how we find these resources, how we move them around, how we refine them, how do we turn them into their final useful form. I think there's a fundamental mismatch in terms of how important these are and how much innovation has happened in a lot of these sectors. Mm-hmm. So it's an area that I've been spending a lot more time in recently, and one that I'm especially bullish on.
Now, my question will sort of tie into the questions I asked in the past. We have from the smaller scale founders who are responding to their environmental cues on what they need to build in different places. And jumping up one level higher, we have VCs, which is, you know, if you think of target managers like a hive mind, VCs like the part of the brain which directs attention. Where should we focus, you know, or money, resources, efforts into for us to develop? But who actually directs where the world is going? You know, VCs are also responding to higher level cues than that they're seeing in the market. And the market, you know, the fluctuations, everything is like the, I'd like to think of it like the brain waves of the mind that is humanity. And so the developments that are happening, the market trends that are occurring, you know, all these things, where does it come from? And where are we going? And who ultimately, or what ultimately leads the foremost direction, you know, on where this world is going? We have people like Steve Jobs, for example, in the first layer, as a founder, responding to the natural cues around him. Oh, we need a better device. And so he made the iPhone, you know, but that also cascaded into pushing other trends, you know, the social media world now happening. And so it creates more trends. And so the world moves in a certain direction after the invention. And still, we're responding to more cues of new things that will be invented in the future. So, and sometimes those developments are not necessarily net positive for humanity. And so we make mistakes and we regress. How much control do you think we have as humans in where this world is going?
I think as a collective planet, we have lots of control. As you know, I think humans are an incredible species. What we've been able to accomplish in a relatively short amount of time is nothing short of incredible. So I think as on the greatest level, we really can influence a lot of the outcomes that you and I get to live. But on a smaller scale, if you bring it down to the individual, it can be tricky. I think people are subject to the circumstances of their environment. Some are able to influence greater impact than others. Some have higher agency than others. Some, you know, are subject to, infinite amount of, you know, randomness that we exist in our world. So, I think we as a group have a lot of power, but as an individual, you know, it's a much more complex, picture in terms of how much leverage someone can kind of exercise and, the influence that they're able to generate on the world around them.
Yes. And I briefly was speaking about this with Teddy Donatus from the embassy in San Francisco and HF0. He spoke about bringing more SF mentality to Europe because, you know, as an investor, as a market builder, he's trying to bring, to create this environment that will put the right cues to the next generation of founders in Europe, because with the war happening in Europe, they have a higher sense of urgency to push innovation on things that actually matter because of necessity. You know, in the last many years, they've been focused a lot on paperwork. It's classic Europe. You know, there's this joke that Europe makes the bottle cap thing, yeah, sticks the thing to the bottle. It's quite annoying. While America builds shit that goes to space, self-driving cars, etc. What are your perspective on building such environments? Is it part of your life mission? Also mentioning about how you want to bring high-speed rail and all this, you know, better infrastructure to America. How do you think we achieve this? And what do you plan to do on your part?
It's a good question. I think it's up to the individual truly determine and influence how they want the world to be. And I think this goes back to your previous question of like, oh, well, can we truly like determine the outcomes of what society looks like? And I think it's true. Yes. And I think it's up to the individual to really kind of exercise their beliefs on the world around them. I think entrepreneurship is probably the best way to do that. You know, it's a way that incentives or structures are aligned, maybe not perfectly, but in a way that facilitates innovation that has outsized impact on the world around them. With regards to how I view my role in that, as an investor, my job is to direct capital to ideas and people that I believe will have outsized impact on the world around them, and that will kind of create a butterfly effect that can impact, influence, and you know, hopefully bring what I view as good to the world. So
with the rise of AI, we are seeing smaller companies being enabled. You know, YC's been predicting, you know, the existence of a 10-person team, $1 trillion company. And I really can see that it might happen. What are your perspective on this? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it more complex than that? Is it going to happen? You know, it is clear that individuals are getting more empowered, but because it's for everyone, does it cancel out? How will market the future change if there's less big companies, monopolies like Google right now, or Facebook, and we're having a more fragmented but numerous smaller companies who are solving very niche problems, but they all work together?
I do agree with the notion that there probably will be a $1 trillion company over time that's built by a small amount of people. I don't know if it's 10 exactly, but this idea that, you know, we can leverage artificial intelligence to be a multiplier effect on the human, on one human's output, is 100% true. How does that shape the world as we know it? You know, I hope it would be economic prosperity for all, but I think it's a much more complex answer than just that. I think when we think about how we use artificial intelligence to create outsized impact, it will be a very fascinating and interesting time to kind of witness what people are able to accomplish. You know, my hope is that, you know, we are able to make costs, the cost of goods and services, so cheap that, you know, a lot of the logistical things in our lives that we spend so much time on can be removed, and we can kind of revert back to kind of our innate human desires, storytelling, these kind of intrinsically human characteristics that are so special to who we are as a species. I think artificial intelligence will allow us to have more time to focus on these things. And yes, there's a concern that, oh, well, people will get replaced. You know, yes, that's inevitable. When the wheel was invented, people got replaced. Every technological breakthrough or innovation, you know, stripped some people of their jobs and essentially pushed them into new ones. Frankly, new economies were created. And yeah, my hope is that artificial intelligence is that breakthrough that allows us to kind of almost make society look like it did a long time ago in some ways.
And what is that?
Just a focus on the individual, the person's creativity, design, things that are scarce, like I mentioned earlier, will just become that much more valuable, right? And I think these like intrinsic traits will be more valuable over time. I think a lot of people are worried about, oh, well, how does this, you know, how does AI affect artists when you have these diffusion models and,
yeah,
you know, AI generated video and text and, you know, what has happened to copywriters, all these things. But I think ultimately those people, it's my belief that you won't be replaced by AI, but you'll be replaced by someone using AI. And yeah, so yeah,
the point on individuality is very interesting, because during my talk with Teddy while we were walking out there, actually, we're increasingly seeing the world getting more anonymized and influence and achievements being credited to big corporations and labels instead of the individual behind it. You know, back then, when we think of great people, we can name names, but now it's more of organizations. Like back then, oh, Marcus Aurelius, oh, you know, this emperor, this guy, Da Vinci, we have all these names. And maybe still, these days, we have big names like Elon Musk, where people can just think of at the top of their heads when you talk about, you know, who's someone who's doing great things or something that's, you know, influential. But mostly these days, it's kind of owned by big corporates. Oh, Google just released this new model. Oh, DeepSeek. Oh, this Chinese company did something that is impressive. And so the humanity is lost. And I feel like with the rise of AI, humans will push back. We're trying to earn back our own identities and dig deeper into what makes us human and express it out there. Also with, you know, the amount of content creation and influencer out there already in social media, how do we stand out against these big labels and brands? And how do we stand out as an individual? And I think the nice part of having more individuals standing out is that people can aspire to individuals. So you cannot aspire, I want to be Google when I grow up. No, but you can say, I want to be like Da Vinci when I grow up. And so I think it's interesting that with AI, we empower the individual. And so more impressive individuals will come up and people can aspire to that. I don't know how true this might translate into what's going to happen in the next 5 years, but what's your perspective on this?
Yeah, I think the AI brings power back to the individual versus the corporation, right? I think you as a person can exercise just as much impact as a, you know, quote unquote corporation has in the past as an individual. So I do hope that we can kind of return to an era where individuals are recognized for their great, their successes and their greatness,
yeah,
as we have in the course of history. Because, you know, I think it's a much more relatable concept and inspirational for many to want to look up to a person as opposed to a group or organization. I think we've been defined in the last 50 years of this massive economic boom, especially in the West, of kind of the leading companies that were driving that forward, and the economic value that they drove. But I think the tools that we've been developing and have created now kind of, you know, like you said, turn the tide back and swing the pendulum back towards the individual. I think is a really special thing. So yeah, I agree with you.
And as an investor, how do you think individuals should pick a direction? Because I think, you know, from myself and people who build companies around me, they're very philosophical. They like to think in first principles. That's essentially what philosophy is. And the thing is, you can only see so much further to the front and to the back for the reason on why you should pick a director. For example, why do I pick defense? Why do you pick civil? Some of it is out of our control. And if we keep asking, like, why do we keep doing things, you know, there's a scope of like how much we should ask, and maybe we should not ask too much, and then we just become too philosophical. It's not useful anymore. Yeah. And so, but in the small scale where we live in, you know, in the scope of the world that we can actually interact and make use and be useful for, how do we pick a direction? How do we pick, you know, I guess more pragmatically, a startup idea to work with? What market should we interact with? Should we write trends? What is your perspective on people writing trends? And yeah.
I don't think people should ride trends for the sake of riding trends. I think you get into perverse incentive structures when you're riding things that are hot just for this, you know, being in a space just because it's hot, just because you want to be riding some wave, is usually not a good thing. If that's your truly your life's work and your life's calling, then great. It's fantastic. Those tailwinds will help propel you to where you want to be, especially if it's hot sector. But, you know, things are cyclical and, you know, markets can turn against you. And if you're riding it, so if you're riding for the wrong reasons, then you're going to get washed out. With regards to how someone should choose what they want to work on, you know, there's this Japanese concept of ikigai. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Yeah. Like to do something that you're good at, to do something that you like to do something that you think brings good to the world and something that, you know, can pay a salary or can sustain your living. I think that is a good framework for how people should decide what to work on. Because life is short. If you optimize too much for one of those things and not the other, you can start to tread into waters where you start to doubt, you know, certain things about yourself. Well, you know, if you're only chasing financial gain, you know, there's going to be a part of you that says, well, you know, this is, the money is great, but my heart is not aligned with this. Or if you chase something that you're really good at, but you can't sustain yourself, You know, part of your heart will say, well, like, I love doing this and my heart is happy, but, you know, if I'm working paycheck to paycheck, barely able to make ends meet, that will also, you know, kind of weigh on you as well. So I think optimizing for the four of those things is really, really important. There's lots of problems that individuals can work on solving. And some are big, some are small, some are somewhere in the middle. But I don't think there's, you know, some noble calling for everyone. You know, I think it's fine if you are doing something that you think brings impact to the world, makes you happy, makes you money, and you're good at it, even if it seems trivial on the surface, like, you know, making cheeseburgers, you know, that's a role as needed in the world and helps make the world a better place. So I think people should try to focus on those things, regardless of how they think they will be perceived for doing those things.
Yeah. What should you optimize in this world, right? That 4 points of Ikigai, they optimize long-term satisfaction, I presume. And sometimes that's not the only parameters. Actually, most times that's not the only parameters that are affecting our decisions. You know, sometimes when we're optimizing on those for long-term satisfaction, it's very hard. Maybe people are not born in a market that supports that direction of whatever idea checks all those four Ikigai boxes. Maybe they're not in a family, you know, country, ethnic background. I don't know, all these other parameters that affect the likelihood of being successful in those four parameters. Should they still try to keep pursuing those four things, or what should they do? You know, it's a hard question. I don't think there's like just one answer, but how do you optimize life?
That is a tough question. It will depend on the individual person, what they're looking for. I think we're all driven by unique incentives. Each person will have a preference for one over another, perhaps. But yeah, I think everyone is entitled to do what they want to do. I think that's what makes humans great, is that, like, we have all these tools at our disposal. We have all this learning and information and people around us, that if you want to go for something because it, you know, you believe it's the right decision at a right given moment in time, you should go do those things. You shouldn't be, you know, you shouldn't solely be influenced by extraneous factors around you that are guiding you, or some mimetic desire to be someone who you truly aren't. You should just be yourself, do what you want to do. You only have one life, and it's going to be over in the you know, snap of a finger. So yeah, make it worth your time.
Make a good story. Yeah,
make a good story. Yeah, exactly. You want to have something to tell other people what you were able to accomplish. So
what about you? What's your plan for life? What's your, you know, strategy? What do you think a lot lately? You know, what's your plans?
Yeah.
Where are you, Kira?
I want to be a good friend and a good family member. I think there's a lot of focus these days on, well, how do I change the world? Yeah. How do I create this like societal level change? I think those are generally good principles for people to look up to. I think the world will head in a better way if everyone's able to do that. But, and yeah, I do want to, you know, accomplish some of those things, but at the same time, like, I want to be able to help and love those that are around me, those that I truly care about, my friends and my family. Because at the end of the day, like, life will go by very quickly. And if you always try to optimize to help support people that you've never met before and overlook the people that are right around you, I think that feels a bit lonely and it's a bit upsetting to think about. So yeah, just being a good friend. I'd love to be a father one day. Be good to my friends, be someone who's trustworthy, reliable, someone who's, you know, pleasant to be around, someone, you know, who can help uplift those around them. Those are the things that I'm, you know, trying to accomplish and what I'm trying to optimize for.
That's very nice. I think a lot of us, we're trying to pursue something big. They want to be great. They have big conditions. Forget about the small things. And they just forget about the influence they have so much just within their vicinity, their family, their friends.
Yep.
And
totally agree.
They lose touch. They travel the world. They travel so far, trying to influence the bigger world. But then the bigger world doesn't know who they are. You know, the bigger world doesn't care who they are. And yeah, that's, I think, something that's very important and very personal also for a lot of founders, including me, because I travel far from home.
And, yeah. Fascinating, you know, track that you're heading on. coming from the largest, you know, Muslim country in the world to Israel, working, you know, in different, working with different people, different walks of life. You mentioned, you know, Russian girlfriend, like just so many interesting aspects to you that are very unique. So I appreciate, it's very, very refreshing to see someone who's willing to kind of challenge themselves and engage with people from all over, all walks of life, different backgrounds and beliefs. I think it's really important, helps shape who you are and how you think in a very unique way that many people would never, you know, take this path and try this path. So I commend you for that.
Thank you very much. I can see the same in you. I think you have a very interesting work and a very important work you're doing, directing the energy of humanity. Where should we work on next? What should we work on next? That's very important. But yeah, I think there's this one thing that my dad really left behind for me that left an impact. You should be able to talk to everyone. That's like the one advice he gave to me. You should be able to talk to everyone. Prince or pauper, saint or sinner, whoever. Male, female, young, old, left, right, whatever. And I think in this world, if you're able to talk to anyone, it's just unlocking so many doors. And you would be doing something you wouldn't expect to be doing before. Travel to places you've never thought of, just because you can speak to them. And that really is something I remind myself always. And I'm about to actually go to Russia. I plan to go there in the next few weeks. And I don't know what's going to happen because, you know, it's the war right now. And I don't have a direct path from Finland, even though it's very close, like four-hour drive.
You hike through the woods somewhere, I'm sure you'll
hike through the woods, you know. That's actually what I'm going to do. You know, I'm going to go down to Estonia, go through a border by walking, literally. There's no like border for cars. You got to walk through, and it's quite scary, but you know, a man's got to do what a man's got to do, you know? Yeah. So where do you see yourself in the next like 2-3 years, 5 years, 10 years?
I guess in the short term, continue to work every day to build upon the skill sets that I have, both as a professional, so becoming a better investor, being much better at being able to find, pick, support companies that I work with, as a person, right? I think, I want to become a better listener. I want to be someone who continues to stay mentally flexible on views and opinions, can be able to consistently change how I view the world around me. I want to always, you know, make sure, ensure every day that I'm improving on these skill sets. So, how that actually realizes itself in the next few years is unclear. I don't exactly know what I'll be doing next week, even per se. If I have a framework of, okay, these are the skill sets that I want to get good at, both as a person and as a professional, hopefully that will kind of guide me, from a top level in what I do the next few years. 10 years from now, it's hard to say exactly, you know, life is random and can come at you in many different ways, but, you know, I'd hope to be, building a family, being good to those around me, be someone who's reliable and trustworthy, as I said earlier. And yeah, go from there. I want to help support people achieve their biggest visions and dreams. So 10 years from now, hopefully I'll still be doing those things.
It's wonderful. You know, I keep poking that question about like what's going to happen in the next few years, 10 years, 20 years, because I was wishing to hear about like, oh, how we want to explore the universe, Mars, and all these places, because, you know, there's a lot of these types of imaginations going around in places like, first of all, SF. People are very ambitious. People are very widely thinking about the world and how sprawling humanity can be in this universe. But I really respect and surprisingly love the fact that your answers are focused around, again, what we discussed before, making the biggest influence on the visitant that we have, like right here, you know, and not trying to be deluded to think too far about how much impact or I guess exploration we can have out there in the world, in the universe.
Yeah.
while forgetting what's just right here.
Yeah.
Are you more on the side of working on Earth and just fixing what we're having problems with in this planet, or should we go to space and explore? What's your thoughts on those?
My answer is probably not binary in the sense that it should be one versus the other. Like, that's a good stuff. As much as I want to focus on where I am physically and the people that are around me and making sure that I'm being the best person I can be in my immediate area, you know, these things aren't mutually exclusive. I also want, you know, I have ambitions for the future of humanity, and I think this idea that people can, you know, think much greater than themselves and how can I influence the world? How can I change the world on kind of grand scales and grand timelines is so important for society. It's how we've gotten to where we are and how we will continue to get to where we are.
Yeah.
I think with regards to terrestrial versus kind of, you know, endeavors that are beyond the bounds of the earth, I think we should be pursuing both, right? We should be trying to fix the core problems that exist today, every day. You know, people are working on that currently. And then there's people that are also working on problems that extend beyond our planet and our solar system. I think for humanity to continue to flourish and prosper, being multiplanetary is you know, kind of one of those, you know, core unlocks there. So I do hope that, you know, we continue to drive ourselves to, you know, explore what's outside of you know, the Earth. Getting to Mars would be fantastic. Building a moon base would be fantastic. Exploring what's outside of our solar system would be fantastic. These are all things that will allow us as a species to continue to do what we do. So I'm in full support of everything that, you know, SpaceX is doing, Rocket Lab, all these other, you know, aspiring entrepreneurs who want to build in space. I think it's great. So I support them 100%.
What do you think about AGI? You know, when I first met you, I asked about the movie Akira, if you've watched it or not. And essentially the movie is about, you know, this group of scientists in Japan creating a super intelligence, biological, you know, by doing bioengineering to some kids and making them in a lab and trying to basically create God. That project is called Project Akira. And what do you think about what we're doing here with AGI? Some people want to accelerate our progress there. Why are we doing that? And why are we so obsessed with the idea of creating this thing, and should we, and what will happen after?
Well, I think we should, because it's going to happen anyways. I think our innate curiosity and our engineering prowess as humans will guide us to that level, regardless of, you know, whether you think we should or we shouldn't. Someone will figure out a way to get there, just because we're driven species and we're curious and we want to answer these questions. Like, oh, can we actually create a technology that is much smarter than ourselves, can think like ourselves, can behave like ourselves? We're going to get there. So I think when you keep that in context, you know, we need to make sure that whoever gets there first is, you know, doing it for reasons. I hesitate to say the right reasons, but is doing it in a manner such that is conducive for the general progress of the greater subset of people. It's a complex and tricky question. I do think that, you know, I would much rather have someone who has shared similar ideals to me get there first. I was born in the US, very pro-America for the most part, not always, but I would much rather have someone who shares those ideals be able to, you know, have the upper hand on that technology as opposed to somebody else who may not share the same ideals and values as me. So I'm excited for, you know, what it comes. It's impossible to guess what it will look like or on what timeline it will come. And I think anyone who's guessing is, you know, quite silly, actually, frankly. I mean, there are some certain people whose opinions I would trust more than others, but yeah, I'm generally excited. Like, humans do cool shit, and, you know, AGI will be another line item on a list of a lot of accomplishments that we've done. Yeah, what it looks like, I have no idea. How it will influence the world, is anyone's guess, but it's going to happen. We're going to get there. So it's important to start discussing, you know, all the questions that kind of get spurred by what this the introduction of this technology looks like.
Yeah, that begs the question, right? Like, do we do things just because we can, and so we will do it anyway. And if it's going to happen anyway, so let's just do it now and be the person who bring it to reality instead of someone that's not us, and then we'll be worried. Is that just how humanity as a organism, if we think of it that way, behaves, you know? And if that's the simple function of what humanity does, do things, if fail, then fail, and then try again, with no any direction at all, it always bothers me every single day, like, where are we going exactly as a species? And are we perhaps doomed to fail? Maybe there's like this innovation that we are pursuing in the future, perhaps after AGI, or perhaps it's AGI, you know, or something after, that would cause the end of us. And then we will start again. Start a new civilization. You know, who knows how many civilizations have started and ended in the past before our time. You know, the pyramids, we don't know a lot of it about the history of mankind. Again, like what I said before, we can only see so much to the future and so much to the past. We're fixed in this like bubble. Is that just how things are? You know, we will bring things to reality. If it is the end of us, it's the end of us. If it's not the end of us, then we just keep going. Because if you think about it in a small scale, in the microcosm, if you think about the smallest unit of life, you know, you can argue, you know, if virus is life or not, but like cells, for example, what do they want, right? The only thing a cell want, I think, if I would write a Python program for what a cell is, function cell, open brackets, keep living, reproduce, repeat. I guess that's it, you know? Every single thing, every single cell in your body ever wants to do is just to live and reproduce. And that builds up with other cells turning into small organisms and finally into us, these more complex creatures. I think that single, you know, four-line program still persists. And if you translate it to humanity as a whole, it's kind of like that. We just do things and we fail, we just fail.
Sure. We're awfully resilient as a creature. So, and awfully curious. So I think, yeah, we're going to do shit just because people can do stuff.
Hmm.
And, you know, the outcomes may be good. The outcomes may be bad. There's a band of outcomes in the middle of those two. But I think for the most part, if we do stumble upon a big mistake, yeah, there's probability, is a probability curve that it ends us all for, you know, for good. But I'd like to think that due to our resilience, it's probably not the case. And, you know, someone will figure something out and we'll continue onwards. And it may look vastly different than what it is right now and where we're living today, or you know, all these other things. But, yeah, our ability to stay alive, like you said, and want to multiply and continue life as we know it, is very strong and innate to who we are. It picks up everything inside of us. So, yeah, we're going to continue doing it, I think.
Life finds a way, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
What sort of, things you can talk like endlessly about, like what sort of ideas, you know, you don't think a lot of people share, but you hold it pretty good, perhaps motivated by like books you read or like movies you watch.
Yeah,
for example, myself, I'm a very sci-fi guy.
Yeah,
Dune universe kind of. That's me.
Yeah, I am lacking proficiency in fiction, in science fiction specifically. I think it's probably a big blind spot of mine and one that I should read up more on. I do spend a lot of my time thinking. I read a lot of nonfiction. I read a lot of things with regards to geopolitics, how different nation states interact with one another, the current dynamics that we have in our world today. I use it for the basis of a lot of my thinking and how I view the world, both personally, but also through my career. You know, the macro influences that drive a lot of the investments that I make and the people that I decide to partner with. So I do spend a lot of time. I think we're entering a really interesting time, an era of, you know, kind of Pax Americana, this kind of global harmony that we've, you know, been living through for the last, you know, 5 or 6 decades is coming to an end, I believe. And with that will become, you know, many pros, many cons, good things, bad things. But it is a change where we are 100% at an inflection point, right now. The world order is changing fast. You know, we're seeing China excel in ways we probably couldn't imagine 20 years ago. But yeah, the West and their kind of hegemony of control over the world as we know it is not the same as it was. And what that brings, there's, you know, infinite discussions and conversation topics. So that's where I kind of spend a lot of my time thinking about is, you know, how this changing global order affects everything else around it.
Let's talk about that. When we think about like what the future of nation states will look like, I have this thesis that, you know, right now we have so much, well, not so much, very little actual influencers in the world. We have, you know, big countries like the US, China, Russia, making most of the decisions, and they're like basically just the decision makers on Earth, perhaps. But talking back into like AI bringing power back to an individual, I think on the mid-level, I'm guessing we're going to see more smaller countries, more tribal, more fragmented ideologies. We'll be able to explore a more diverse way of thinking, because right now the world is quite monogamous because we're so centralized in these big powers. But in the future, when individuals have more power, in the mid-level, we're also going to see smaller nation states having a lot of influence, like the Middle Ages. What do you think about that?
I think we're headed that way, 100%. I think the internet, although it hasn't fully taken form yet, has created a conduit for people to kind of fragment based more so on ideology, personal preferences, beliefs in a way that was never possible before. You can, you know, even freight, right? You look at freight, right? It's like you considered it a state in itself. It's a collection of people that were attracted here through the internet. Right? You probably found out about freight online and your rest of the cohort as well. You aligned on this view of the world and how you wanted to work, how you wanted to live. Everything was made sense for you here, so you aggregated here in this physical place. I think that same could be said for a lot of different, you know, ideologies or ways of living. And the internet has produced that. And how the internet will allow people to congregate based on a shared sense of values and beliefs is something that will result in kind of a more fragmentation of these so-called nation state paradigm that we've kind of boxed ourselves into for a bit. I think states will become more competitive with each other. I think you look at special economic zones of countries, you know, providing areas for people to kind of innovate, both politically, but technologically as well, will allow people to, you know, kind of have the opportunity in some cases to remove themselves physically or by association of the place that they were born with.
Yeah.
And I think that introduces a lot of interesting outcomes. What it will look like in 10, 100, 1,000 years, unsure, but we now have these tools that allow us to kind of aggregate in ways that was kind of inconceivable beforehand.
How do you think founders should, and maybe we can use this to like close, because we're going to have a demo in 50 minutes.
Let's go.
What do you think, and how do you think founders should position themselves in this increasingly rapidly changing environment? You know, what sort of pointers they should keep in touch and just keep close to heart to make sure, you know, whatever they're doing, you know, is in the best interest of the world, but also, you know, will be successful, you know, and how you should they navigate the increasingly changing world. What are some pointers you would leave for founders?
Be thoughtful in everything you do. Be able to look at every opportunity and every decision with a focus on, you know, why am I doing something? What are the upsides? What are the downsides? Be able to quickly build a case for doing something, but also steel man the argument itself. Being incredibly thoughtful is truly important. That's one of my strongest recommendations. Be bold. Be willing to take risks. If you don't take risks, then you will stay stagnant. And if you're trying to build a generational business or company, staying stagnant is death. Taking risks calculated when necessary is very important. I think those would be the two most important things right now. How you get your business to where you want to be can look you know, can happen in a million different ways, right? I think a lot of founders are convinced that they need to follow a prescribed set of instructions to get them to where they need to be. They need to follow some path that's been paved for by people before them. But I think that couldn't be farther from the case. I think people that will ultimately be the most quote unquote successful are the ones that are able to kind of take the path less traveled, to think outside of themselves, to expand what it means to build a generational company in today's day and age. Mm-hmm. I think those will actually end up being the best outcomes. So I think I encourage people to be clever about how they go about building their business, be thoughtful, and be bold.
I love that you said to left the path less traveled, because that's my motto in life.
There we go.
I love that, Akira. Hey, it's been fun.
Thank you. Appreciate it. It's been great. I appreciate the conversation. It's a lot of fun. We'll have to do it again soon.
Hell yeah. Thanks for coming.
Of course.
There you go.
Oh yeah.
Nice.
All our shows and podcasts available online on our website and on all podcast platforms. Search Audioversity.
Come to my hackathon. Come. Go. I just bought you a hackathon. Special deal. 20% off.
Startup Shook. Exploring Israel's Tech Bazaar with Deo Arlo.